Hello, this is Brian Cam, and you're listening to Clear Story. And in particular, you're listening to a set of responses that I received to a prompt which I gave in April 2023 about how to balance making a living with living a meaningful life. So in this episode, I'll be playing back some of those responses, and I'm still accepting responses. So if you would like to submit a voice note of your own, please go to briancam.com/record. I hope you enjoy listening to these responses, and thank you to everyone who submitted them. How do you balance the necessities of life with pursuing your life's purpose, your creative impulse, or your art? Or to put it another way, how do you balance making a living with living a meaningful life? I'm Brian Cam, and you are speaking to Clear Story. I'm hoping that you will submit your reflections on what I see to be a fundamental tension between doing what we feel we must in terms of living a meaningful life and what we have to do just to stay alive. This is something that I've been thinking about a lot in the last few years. As background, about 5 years ago, I had saved enough money to leave permanent employment. So I was working full-time in finance, and that did not leave me a lot of time to pursue my creative goals. For the past 5 years, I have been setting my own schedule, coming up with my own goals, and pursuing them, which on the one hand is living the dream. On the other hand, it's required a lot of effort, and at times it's been very tough. And that's because I'm a very social person. I need to be around people. And so even before the pandemic, I was engineering all these kind of routines. I run a book club. I run a discussion group in central London. And of course, I've hosted many inter-intellect salons, both online and offline. But during this time, if I wanted to see anyone, I pretty much had to engineer it myself, which could be quite exhausting. And at times it was lonely. I had no real external motivations of the normal kind, meaning no money, no prestige, no status, no interest for most of it. At times I did have collaborators for brief periods of the project that I was working on. That started out as a novel and has since morphed into a work of philosophy, which I'm calling Neither Nor, and which you can find out about on this podcast. I've decided in the past few months to take a break, which ironically means getting a job and going into permanent employment again. And that's just to get some kind of stability of routine and being able to see people face to face, that kind of thing. And so it looks like I'm returning to full-time employment, and I have very mixed feelings about that. So right now, I'm asking you to record at least 5 minutes, but it can be as long as you want, reflecting on this question as I shift gears and attempt to juggle my own life's work with making some kind of income. I'm wondering how you have navigated this tension. I'd love it if you could share your name, where you're from, where you're living now, and what you do, both in terms of your life's purpose as you see it, and what you do day to day. I'm very curious if these things are in tension for you or if they're not. So for example, if you're doing creative work and making a living from it, I would love to hear about that. If you are working full time but doing something creative on the side, or you've devoted your life to what you see as your life's purpose, and now you are struggling financially or otherwise to meet the demands of life. And this does not need to be some kind of grand artistic project. It could be raising a family or starting a company or doing volunteer work or spreading a message. It could be anything, just whatever you consider your purpose. And of course, you could also still be figuring that out. So maybe you just need a bit of space away from work or school or whatever your day-to-day is in order to figure out what you want to do with your life. Any of those are fine. I'm very interested in getting completely open reflection. If you don't like any of the framings that I've given, just say whatever you want. And if you wish to remain anonymous, you also don't need to say anything about where you are or anything like that. Very happy for you to say as much or as little as you like. But I do invite you to kind of open up a bit and reflect for at least a few minutes. And if you go over, it's fine. I also invite you to share this invitation, which you can find at briancam.com/record. And this will be a way for anyone you send this link to hear this message and upload audio should they wish to. So if there's anyone in your life where you're curious how they answer this question or would like to hear about the tension that they've experienced, how they've made a success of it, or how they've potentially had problems with it, you can go too far in either direction, too rigid, which I've done working in finance, or too open in some sense, which I feel I've done. I think it's been massively beneficial to the project that I'm working on, but I'm also very, very tired and lonely and sad. So I'm very excited to hear your reflections on this topic. And so if you'd like to contribute, please go to briancam.com/record. And that link is also in the show notes. And so again, here's the question. How do you balance the necessities of life with pursuing your life's purpose, your creative impulse, or your art? How do you balance making a living with living a meaningful life?
Hello, Brian. And thanks so much for asking this question. I think it's a very important question, and I had a lot of insights listening to the first episode of your podcast dedicated to this voice note experiment. I have a lot of thoughts on this. Last year I took a sabbatical for 11, 12 months, so one full year off, living on my savings. So I did more or less what you did with the 5 years, but on a smaller scale. And it's something that I wanted to do to see how my life would be if I didn't have the rhythm, you know, of a corporate job. So what would I do on a daily basis? How would I think about life if I had, you know, 1 or 2 years off? The plan was to not work for 2 years. And when I say not work, is not work in a 9-to-5 job. I would still try to do something, some projects, but, you know, 95% of the time not getting paid because I would write, you know, essays for myself, or I would, you know, write for my blog or interview people. And I know eventually you can get paid by doing this, but I think especially in the beginning when you're experimenting, most of us are doing it for free. And there is value there, but nonetheless, we're not paid for it, or we're doing it just because we enjoy, you know, the pleasure of a conversation with a stranger, and we're not thinking to, I don't know, just insert an ad there about a product that we might or might not like. So how do I balance this this work life, you know, like a 9-to-5 kind of job that, you know, I'm not so interested in, with a meaningful life, like a creative life? And I think one doesn't necessarily exclude the other. I think there are a lot of people that have a normal job in whatever industry, but they still have a lot of meaning in their life, and that meaning is not deriving only from work. You can have, you know, a beautiful family, you can have a beautiful friendship, or just a very good relationship with yourself, and basically finding a lot of joy in the little things, like a good coffee in the morning, a great book. Sorry, I'm losing my voice. It's tricky to think about balance right now, even though these days, these weeks, I am trying to do that. So after this sabbatical, I'm back to a 9-to-5 job here in The Hague, in the Netherlands. Previously, last year I lived in Switzerland. In the beginning of January, I lived in Brasov, Romania. I'm originally from Romania, so I wanted to go back to my country for a few months. It's cheaper there to pay rent. I also wanted, of course, to see my family and friends and to be near the Romanian mountains, which are absolutely beautiful and wild. And after that, I tried Berlin again. I previously lived in Berlin in my early 20s. I studied there and I lived there for almost 5 years. I gave it another try and it didn't work out because I changed and I wanted something else from a city. And eventually last year in August, I moved here to The Hague. And in the first months, I just tried to find some freelancing. But even though this year was, first of all, the last year of my 20s and the only year in my 20s in which I didn't work at all, apart from being, I think, a student in my early 20s. It was a very difficult year. I had a lot of stress, I think, chronic stress. I was very anxious and I wasn't enjoying myself that much because the financial insecurity was always there. I mean, if you don't have an income for 12 months and at the end of that year, you're also not having, I don't know, a very successful business that can really provide with enough money to live, especially in the Western world. You know, financial stress can really leave a mark on your mental health. This with moving around and having a lot of chaos in your life is really stressful and really painful and really, you know, disorienting. And even though I was doing more or less what I love, like writing essays or, I don't know, learning about things and having a lot of free time to just walk in the city, I was honestly quite miserable. I'm reflecting on this year and I think whenever I had the balance to have a lot of free time doing like a 9-to-5 job and also have some sort of a side hustle, passion project that may or may not, you know, become sustainable financially at some point, I think that's when I was the happiest, you know, that hope of having that hope that things can become better. However, last year, because I was in this financial stress, even though I had enough savings, you know, to last me for 1 year, 1 year and a half, and even 2 years if I lived in the Eastern, in Eastern Europe, I was still very, very stressed and very unsure of the future. And at some point, I even lost hope for some weeks when I had my bleakest times. So I'm still trying to figure this out for myself. How do I find this balance? And right now, I think I more or less found it because this new job that I have, it's not a very stressful job. I work with nice people, friendly people. I'm not doing something that I deeply love. So I work in IT right now. Whatever that is, data and IT and with data governance, and it's just a job, like, at the end of the day. But I have some flexibility. The time working there is not a lot, like, you know, comparing to Switzerland, where I lived for 2 years and a half, or Berlin, 5 years. I think the work ethic and work culture is a bit different here in the Netherlands, different in a way that I like it. So I have that flexibility. I'm not that stressed for now. This might change in some months. Things can change in, you know, any job. And I'm trying to develop my project, the Flaneurs Project, and, you know, to conduct interviews with people all over the world about their walking experiences, to, you know, apply for funds for this project, and to continue writing. For writing's sake and for my own sake, because whenever I write, I feel like my mental health improves, and also my awareness, and also how I see the world you know, is a bit more diverse and more complex than when I don't write. So I don't know if I answered your question. I think it's a lifelong project for me to discover this balance between work, finances, you know, having some good money so that I don't feel the financial stress, and also doing something that I love and having enough energy. Because I think at the end of the day, if we had, I don't know, 24-hour energy and we didn't sleep and we didn't need to sleep, we could do a lot of things in a day. But our energy is very limited, and, you know, I think we have a lot of unhappiness when we maybe work in a job where all our energy is drained, and then when we come home, we don't have enough energy to, you know, invest in things that are nourishing for our souls and hearts and minds and bodies. So I don't know. I think for me, for now, having a job that's quite flexible in how I spend my time and not that stressful, but that also pays well so that I don't have financial stress, plus, you know, hustling in other projects that may or may not pay in the long term is something that gives me some balance. I don't know how sustainable this is. And I also don't know exactly what the future holds for my project. All I know is that I want to have some sort of a social impact on improving the life of some people. For example, I want to focus on helping people that went through, you know, horrible experiences of street harassment, you know, and how can we improve and design better ways to help people that, you know, have gone through those experiences. And just thinking about that or designing projects like this, I think gives me some meaning and happiness, even though I, you know, have to wake up at 7-8 in the morning and start a job that it's not necessarily my thing. I know that some people are very blessed to, you know, to do what they love since they were, you know, very young. And I think there are a lot of factors there. Our lives are too complex and too unique to give an advice that will work for you, dear listener. I think it's a lifelong it's a lifelong project. I think it's something that I will have different answers along the years. So yeah. Thanks for listening, and thanks again, Brian, for this beautiful question.
How do you balance making a living with living a meaningful life?
Thanks so much, Brian, for that prompt and lots of detail as well. I think there's loads to unpack there. The first thing that comes to mind when I think about the tensions that exist between focusing on sustaining your life, being fed, being housed, and essentially what that comes down to, of course, is making money versus nurturing your creative spirit, your most enlightened philosophical self, and how oftentimes those two parts can be at odds. And I think that that tension actually comes truly from the society that we live in. When we think about things, policy ideas that have been attempted in our capitalistic society but have failed, we think about things like basic income. There's an element of our society that prioritize certain things over others. Very vague, I know. Let me just unpack that a little bit. When we think about people who are at home caring for our most vulnerable in our society, oftentimes it's actually more often than not women that do that. And a lot of them will do that at no pay or not get rewarded for those efforts. When we think about people who want to spend their day philosophizing and actually thinking about what it means to exist on this planet and to be a human. I think those are very important thoughts to be exploring. But again, that's not always something that gets rewarded financially. So I think the context and the systems that we operate in are super capitalistic and really focused on being quite profit and money driven, which means that naturally this tension exists. Whereas I think if our society was structured differently, then that tension might not be at the heart or pulling creatives into areas or workplaces or spending their days doing the types of things that they don't necessarily want to do. So anyways, I'll get off my anti-capitalistic soapbox and think more about what this means in my context and how I live my life. So first and foremost, I do feel quite privileged to be working in a job that nurtures my creative spirit. I do a lot of big meta problem solving for government, for public sector institutions, and that allows me to be at the intersection of, yes, things like business process optimization, understanding operations and how things work, but also the very real human element around people's behaviors, how they interact, and just really trying to make those institutions run better with humans at the heart of it. So I do feel like my creative spirit gets nurtured in my work life. But of course, there's many other creative projects that are unrelated to public sector, internal improvements and culture change. So there's practical elements, and there's also the fact that I think in order to nurture your most creative self, there is an element of taking good care of yourself too. Like the well-being question kind of comes into play. When I think about moments in my life where I've been very burnt out or exhausted, it's very hard for me to think creatively or to create the space and bandwidth in order to, you know, write for a couple hours, paint or do anything that is nurturing my creative spirit because you're in survival mode. So I've over the last couple of years, maybe it's just aging and becoming a bit more wise, but I've put a lot more emphasis on actually taking care of myself so that I can take care of all other aspects of my life. So really trying to be well rested, trying to pay more attention to anything that's triggering my anxiety. So whether that's like little admin tasks that I'm pushing away that are causing me stress in overcorrected manners in the longer term, and just really trying to be more in tune with my wants and needs, sleeping more. I think the starving artist archetype that we've built is quite problematic. So I think there's a lot to be said around taking good care of yourself in order to nurture your creative spirits. So I've been focusing a lot of that on that, sorry. And maybe this is just my behavioral science or nudging approach to life, but I do think that removing any barriers, like physical barriers to accessing the tools that you need in order to explore your most creative self, is really important. So for example, as much as I really love pen and paper or a freshly sharpened pencil on a piece of paper to do my writing and be sat in the perfect environment, perfect lighting, maybe it's that part of the day in London where the sun's kind of low in the sky and setting. Like I just feel like all these things put a lot of pressure, as much as they're wonderful, on the time and place in order for me to be my most creative self. So I've really leaned into actually doing a lot of writing on my phone. I personally feel like inspiration hits at very random parts of my day. So oftentimes when I'm on the subway and people watching, I rarely listen to music or podcasts when I'm on the subway. I actually find just watching humans to be quite fascinating because that makes me sound a little creepy, but it's coming from just a really genuine, authentic place of being fascinated by humans and cities. And I feel like using my notes app on my phone has done wonders. I actually started writing my first ever screenplay. The first half of it was completely written or solely written on my phone. And once I transferred it over onto Google Drive into a proper template, I actually noticed it took me a lot longer to access it and to write it. And maybe I'm just making excuses, but I do think there's something to be said about removing barriers and being open to being creative in environments or situations that don't necessarily align with this like creative ideal or this perfect writer's nest. So I do feel like I've leaned in more to just being creative when inspiration hits, as opposed to trying to orchestrate the perfect environment. And that's definitely done wonders for me. Conscious that I've been talking for more than 6 minutes, and this was meant to be a 5-minute voice note reflection on, yeah, how you actually balance your creativity with some of the other more boring requirements of living life in this current system. So I'm going to stop there. But thank you so much for making me ponder this question. And I'm looking forward to hearing what other folks shared in terms of their own experience of nurturing their creative self, which is often at odds with, yeah, getting those paychecks that we all need. Thanks, Brian.
How do you balance making a living with living a meaningful life?
In response to the question about how do you balance your life's purpose, your creative impulse, or your art with the realities of life, I think it really is an impossible task at times. But again, I think it's a really good question, and everyone's going to answer it a little bit differently. And I actually think that I'm very grateful to have the ability to even be able to think about this question. There's a lot of people that they're so focused on surviving that they don't really have the time to even think about and pursue what's meaningful to them in their life and whatever that might be. So for me, it sounds like the way I see it, work is what is necessary to continue to survive in order to pursue a meaningful life, which is ultimately more important but not achievable without maintaining your life. So you got to, you know, hit Maslow's hierarchy of needs, make sure that you're able to survive. And typically it's done through work or other ways to gain financial resources or things that can help you survive. And it's a skewed balance to start in that way. And again, I think I'd advocate to flip the seesaw so that eventually more of the focus is on meaning in life and not the work to gain resources to survive, to continue to live. But they're intertwined, as you can see. And, you know, one of the best ways I think to live a meaningful life is to optimize the amount of life-sustaining resources for your effort and work. So basically efficiency, you know, make the money work, work for you, get the highest salary you can, find a job that allows you the most free time to do the things that you find meaningful in life. Because that's ultimately what the point is. You want to get those resources so you can allocate them in the direction that you want to focus on. And it's usually what's meaningful for you. For me, it's connecting with others. Other people might be connecting with the environment, pursuing passions that they have, special skill sets and interests. So if you're lucky to combine both of those and make your work something you're actually passionate and you think is meaningful, that's the ultimate life hack. And I think, you know, another way to do it is if you find the right society where you can essentially match up your relative strengths and weaknesses with the community and share those combined resources that you output, you could all maximize your available time to pursue your values and goals and meaningful life. And that's essentially what has happened, it seems like, with society evolutionarily over time, is we've gotten to the point now where things have become automated for a lot of the work to free us up to actually pursue these things, which is great. A practical thing that I like to do to take advantage is take advantage of gap time. So that's that time that the time where you're just kind of sitting and waiting, whether it's for coffee or it's in my life, I wait for my daughter to finish her dance class, that I'm kind of stuck in a waiting room. I can't really watch her anyway. So that's a great time for me to pursue meaning, carve out the time from work, doing the tasks of making sure my family's okay, making sure I'm okay. And I'm doing those things while also carving out time to pursue meaning. And I think you can also be more efficient with your internal resources, for example, by choosing the right diet, adjusting your mindset to better fit your situation. So you're expending less energy in unhelpful situations. You don't feel, quote unquote, like you're spinning your wheels. And this comes up, this idea, a lot in psychology. The idea of if you're better able to check your cognitive biases, then you're expending energy in more efficient ways. I'm not worried about the plane engine that's going to fall on my rooftop while I'm sitting here, while that might be a possibility. Instead, I'm going to worry about things that are more practical, you know, like what is it that I need to get done to meet a work deadline, or what is it I need to do to pursue the things that I find meaningful. And so instead of putting energy in those other directions, you can better focus it to be more efficient and hopefully refocus on the things that are meaningful if you have the ability to do so. So if we could get the artificial intelligence to create a prototype of my business app, and market that for me, that would be amazing. So I see that there's a lot of potential for growth in this area. Hopefully, as more and more work becomes optimized and requires less input from us as humans, hopefully that'll free us humans up to do more things like pursuing meaning, whatever that means.
How do you balance making a living with living a meaningful life?
Hi, Brian. For anyone else listening, my name is Nastasia Hrifiun. I am a researcher at the Games for Emotional and Mental Health Lab. I live in the Netherlands. And apart from doing research, I love to engage myself in all sorts of creative things, or at least I like to think that they are creative. And your question about balancing living a meaningful life, for me that means it's a difficult question, really. How do you define meaning? I mean, for me, I'm 30 years old, so on the one hand I feel like I've already had a long long time to figure this out, and yet I haven't, and that's stressful sometimes. I've been really lucky to, in my work at the GEM Lab, be able to engage in all of my creative whims, which I really feel like they're whims, you know, taking me wherever the wind blows. I've been really lucky that I've been able to do that and still get paid for what should be my work as a researcher. But now more and more I'm trying to figure out who I want to be. Am I a researcher? Am I something else? I'm not an artist. I even don't think I'm massively creative, because more and more I feel like my interests are governed by whatever I see someone else doing that I really find super cool, which happens a lot. People are doing really amazing stuff out there. And that's frustrating a little bit. I feel like I'm grasping at so many fascinating things, fascinating facets of projects that people are doing, fascinating areas of life, and never really being able to get a hold of that web, really. I guess in my balance, in my quest for trying to balance being creative and still being able to make a living, so pursue my passions and my interests and my curiosity and still be able to pay the rent or the mortgage in my case. Yeah, I feel like an important part of that balancing pursuit is for me to figure out what it even is a meaningful life. And I feel like I'm interested in so many things that I can't really pin it down. And that makes it hard to hone in and feel centered somehow. So as long as I don't have that center, I don't know if I can refind that center in another kind of career or in another kind of job, or maybe refind that center in the job that I'm having now, which I still love and adore. I'm just always looking for new new things, which is definitely, it's wonderful, but it's exhausting at the same time and can be frustrating to always want to go at rocket speed. So yeah, that's kind of my journey, I guess. I hope perhaps someone else will find it relatable or recognize something of themselves in it. But yeah, thanks so much, Brian, for posing this question, and I'm really enjoying hearing everybody else's thoughts and responses to this. Thank you.
How do you balance making a living with living a meaningful life?
Hello, Brian. It's Michael DeClercq. Currently reside in Mountain View, California, Bay Area, soon to be on Thursday in Wyoming in the Grand Tetons doing conservation work for the next 3 months, which I am so stoked for. How do I balance living a meaningful life with making a living? Well, I think it's interesting because I'm 23, and so like this is the question right now that I'm asking myself, and in a certain sense my life hasn't really started. So, you know, the ways in which I answer this question right now is kind of still theoretical and philosophical, although I'm definitely, you know, by this next career or, you know, this next gig that I'm doing, definitely like a lot of thought went into that decision. And I think for me, how I like to think about this question is like, what are the choices and decisions that are available to me right now that I can make that can, you know, get me a little bit closer to what it means to live a meaningful life. And I think like not being burdened with the prospect of trying to figure out one thing that encapsulates every, you know, like one career that that holds in the balance our entire life's meaning, I think is not only probably like a fool's errand and not possible, but it just causes so much stress and overwhelm, because I think ultimately it's like meaning for me is such a multi-dimensional, multifaceted thing that I don't think it can be accomplished through one career, unless that career allows like ultimate unlimited freedom to explore everything that you want to explore. And I think, you know, for me, I ultimately think I will probably be a writer and potentially a teacher, a writer of philosophy and psychological wisdom. And, you know, I think trying to arrive at, similar to what you do, like trying to arrive at the meaning of life and these big questions through our work. But, you know, that obviously takes a lot of work, and you have to build up an audience, and it's not like a guarantee, not even close to a guarantee, that it'll be financially viable. And so right now I'm like, okay, what is something that I can do that is also in accordance with how I find meaning? And for me, this last year, really, I have really committed to becoming more integrated and connected with nature. I am finding that value extremely important. And so my initial kind of foray into that was through wildlife photography. And now it's, you know, bird watching and species identification, from bees and flies and tadpoles to, you know, the biggest game animals. And this opportunity that I'm going into is allowing me to, you know, collaborate with people. I think it's a really important element, and work on the land, like understand what it means to protect and cultivate an ecosystem and the interconnectedness of all of the different plant species and how they arrived there and how, you know, we can continue to protect them. And I think that embodied like practice, you know, that embodied practice and that embodied wisdom will serve me really well in the future. And you know, it's a government position, so we're getting paid subsistence wages. And on the face of it, it might look like kind of an odd decision to make, especially somebody who like just graduated college and, you know, like has aspirations and ambitions of like doing a lot of things. But I think if I spend too much time in the kind of like fantasy dreaming kind of like scheming of like grand plans, then I get paralyzed by all the different potential avenues. And I think the more I've embraced living a meaningful life with being like immensely complex and multidisciplinary, I think the more opportunities have presented themselves to me, and that's made it a lot easier to just go for something and to just trust that it will work out.
How do you balance making a living with living a meaningful life?
Hi, Brian. This is Maggie Appleton. I'm in London and I'm answering your question. How do you both make meaning and make a living? I was a little resistant to answer this question when you first put it up. I wanted to because I love your podcast and I love you, and I wanted to be part of this lovely little experiment you're running. But I felt bad because I haven't really struggled with this question, which immediately I'm going to say makes me feel guilty. I recognize I'm incredibly lucky that the thing that for me, I think gives me meaning is something that happens to pay well, let's say. And I can get into, I think there's a bit more nuance and complexity to it, but the thing that I find gives me meaning is researching and designing and exploring interfaces, you know, digital interfaces, designing digital products that people use, thinking about the theory of what makes good products, you know, doing good user research to kind of make products that actually have an impact in the world. I get a lot of meaning from that. That's my day job, right? And it pays well. So I haven't really had to struggle with feeling like there is a strong tension between the things that give me life and meaning and the things that can pay my rent. At least that is the simple side of the story. There's actually a frame I'd like to put this in that I just heard from a friend, that every story you tell yourself about your life, there is a light and a dark side, and they are both true. So the light side of this story is that I found a way to work a job that gives me plenty of meaning and enough money. And right, great for me, right? But there's also a dark side, which is that I probably have just Stockholm syndrome, right? Like, I became a designer in tech quite early. I realized this was something people would pay me for. And so I decided that this gave me meaning in life. And when you decide that the thing you're being paid for is actually the most meaningful thing you could possibly be doing in the world, that sounds a little suspicious, right? That sounds a lot like playing it safe. That sounds a lot like, well, isn't it convenient that I'm being paid to do this thing? I think I'm going to decide that this is my life's calling. So I think there's definitely a side of the story where I am being less brave than I should be. I'm being much less ambitious than I should be. And I am just kind of going with the flow and allowing other people to set the priorities of what I believe is meaningful and important to me. Again, these are two, you know, oversimplified stories about how I make meaning and my work, but they do both feel true. I'm going to dig into the dark side, or the shadow side a bit, because that's obviously more interesting, right? It'd be very boring for me to just be like, yeah, you know, I get paid to do something meaningful. Like, isn't that great? End of story. There is more nuance to the shadow side, because there are lots and lots of things I do that do not make money that I find very meaningful. I do a lot of writing online. I write about the intersection of anthropology and design and programming. And I love that. And that doesn't directly pay money. So, right, I have a blog, I write a lot on it. I'm very fortunate that people read that blog and respond to me a lot. And I've made so many good friends and so many incredible collaborative partners through writing publicly online. It indirectly does lead to money, because what happens is I write things, people read my work, and then I often get job offers in response to very specific things I've written. So like the job I currently work, so I'm a product designer at an AI research lab. It came out of the fact that I was writing a lot about how new artificial intelligence techniques could enable new kinds of personal knowledge management, essentially how AI could enable different kinds of reasoning and research tactics. And the research lab I currently work for focuses on that, right? That's, we're trying to build products to do that. So it was a very natural fit. They kind of went, oh, this designer's already thinking about this. You know, she's already thinking through products that could work this way. It's a very easy fit for us to then just try to recruit her. So there's a complicated piece in there, right? Where like I pour hundreds and hundreds of hours into writing these blog posts that have absolutely no monetary output in kind of a direct sense, but in an indirect sense, they lead to really wonderful jobs. So that's somewhere in the middle of like, you know, indirect, direct meaning to money pipeline. But then I also do lots of things that definitely have no monetary output, right? So I love community organizing. One of my favorite things to do is just spend a lot of time in pubs with friends who take ideas seriously, discussing things and just kind of riffing on ideas. You and I are a part of many groups that spend our time doing this, right? And none of that makes any money. And that's totally fine. I wouldn't want it to. I think that would taint the whole thing. But I do want to spend more time doing that, which leads me to a bit of conflict about how I balance that with work responsibilities. And, you know, do you go to the 8 p.m. meeting or do you go hang out with your friends is a question I have to ask myself almost every day. To come back to the shadow side and my probable Stockholm syndrome, I think recently I've been realizing more and more that I hang out with people like you, Brian, or many other people in our friend group who I think take seriously their meaning-making activities and prioritize them a lot over kind of the practicalities of making a living. Obviously, you cannot trade those off indefinitely, but you can trade them off for periods of time. And being part of that group has definitely made me realize how much I am playing it safe by staying in well-paid jobs that I tell myself give me meaning versus doing, frankly, the riskier thing that I think would be much more interesting and have much more potential upside, which is to do something like go down to a part-time work week or to take an extended period of time off and just see what happens if I pursue my research and writing full-time for a bit and get to do a lot more community organizing. There's definitely a part of me that deeply wants to do that and fears a few things. One is that there might actually be a less effective way for me to spend my time. I think I do believe in collaboration and effective organizations, and again, I am maybe just the best candidate for Stockholm syndrome, but I naively believe the company I work for is actually making things that matter and we are doing work that matters, right? I have just swallowed the pill or whatever. So I feel it would be a less effective way for me to spend my time. I definitely fear that I would be less effective working independently. I know this is something we've talked about, that we're both very social people. I just need people. I need to talk to people. I need to be in meetings. I need to be thinking with people. I don't do my best thinking alone. Every time I have an idea that ends up becoming quite impactful, it emerges in conversation with people. It doesn't emerge from me sitting alone typing notes in my computer, doing the research work and the preemptive thinking work on my own. Kind of sets me up to have ideas in conversation with people, but they're definitely social ideas. I think I'm a huge believer in the kind of collective intelligence, the seniors, being around people who are trying to grapple with the same difficult problems and ideas that you're trying to grapple with, I think is really important. And independent research or working on your own makes that really, really hard. So I fear that. And of course, I fear the financial side of things. You know, even if I could take some time off and work independently, eventually you do need a stable income. And we don't currently have many economic formats that make that possible. You know, I don't think Patreon is really a sustainable and robust long-term solution for most people. Obviously, some people make it work. I think they are definitely the exception. There are obviously lots of fellowships that can kind of tide you over for a period of time, but again, they are not a consistent source of income. It's almost an entire different job to get up to speed on all the ways that you would have to strategically think about finances and business to set yourself up for a sustainable income as an independent researcher who really has the liberty to pursue whatever you want in order to serve your kind of meaning-making activities. So those are the things I think that hold me back. But this is a very alive question for me because I am so fortunate to be friends with people who take this so seriously and are finding ways to make that work, who are finding ways to make themselves financially sustainable and are finding ways to make independent research work and are then able to pursue, frankly, much more interesting, much more creative paths than I'm probably pursuing at this point. So that's just something I'm actively reflecting on is I think I fear I'm not being ambitious enough and I'm sort of leaving behind a whole bunch of possible futures where I do make a larger impact than I would have otherwise, because maybe I took time off and I really did research and writing that I don't see anyone else doing, but I genuinely think is super important. I think there are things I'm noticing and seeing that are not being said anywhere or are not being clarified into words. And at this point in my life, I have at least realized and I'm able to own that I seem to be better at that than other people. I seem to be better at sort of noticing patterns and then writing them up into long form essays in a way that are clear to people and resonate with people. I hope I'm not being too boastful or like confident in saying that, but I have noticed that I seem to do that in ways that other people don't. And it's probably really dumb of me to ignore that fact. Anyway, thank you for the prompt. I was being a little vulnerable in this, which is something I'm trying, just sort of walking you through all my current insecurities and uncertainties. And I'm looking forward to figuring it out in conversation with everyone in our wonderful group.
How do you balance making a living with living a meaningful life?
Hi, Brian. This is Gloria. I'm responding to your interest in having responses to the living a meaningful life versus making a living. And I've enjoyed the responses in your part one. And I thought I'd chime in too. I feel like my story is a little different from others because my jobs have made me feel that I have a meaningful life. And maybe that's because they're vocations. And I think the issue of vocation, doing what we're called to do, is an interesting consideration. But I have had the advantage, so this may actually exclude me from the whole issue, because I've had the advantage of being supported as I carried out my most meaningful job, which was raising a family. It was the hardest, most demanding job I ever did, raising five kids, but it was enormously gratifying, enormously satisfying, and quite creative as well. Lots of hard work, but lots of creative outlets. When I listened to many of these responses and Brian's desire to have time for his creative outlet, which I think is that's what he means about having a meaningful life. I think the difference between me and some of the others is that creatively, I do not have an opus in me. I have many different tiny creative accomplishments that give me satisfaction and give life meaning for me. They can be as simple as trying to satisfy the needs and interests of my children, whether it was to find a good piano teacher or a karate studio or a summer camp that had kitchen chemistry or origami. I had the satisfaction of trying to expand my kids' experiences, their skills and their knowledge, and I would get creative satisfaction from making a theme party or getting great bargains at secondhand stores for things the kids wanted to do or play with or wear, checking out every library book by an author that one of the kids liked, and so many other intentional acts that gave meaning to my years of mothering. Since then, I've gone back to school, which I did for 5 years before I had my children. Though rather than going back to being an elementary school teacher, this time I came back as a high school teacher. And teaching, like raising children, definitely feels meaningful, though often very challenging. I teach Spanish, and I find it fascinating and creative, and I learn more words all the time as I guide advanced students through newspaper articles and literature. I continue to learn more about Spain and Latin America and the culture and the geography and the politics and the history. I don't always have students as interested as I am, but the ones who are make it very gratifying and it feels meaningful. I find creativity in decorating my classroom with Latin artisanry that I collect, and that brings me joy. I can tell my students about it, each piece and where it came from, what kind of people made them. And I enjoy beautiful surroundings because I decorate with those things. Happily, I do feel I have had a meaningful life. Maybe because service is the foundation of at least knowing that your existence is making a difference for others. There's satisfaction in enjoying those small creative outlets. So for those of you who have an opus in you like Brian, I wish you well, and I hope you will find a way to free yourself from unsatisfying work to do what you feel called to do, and hopefully one day to produce that opus. Good luck. FYI, this is Brian's mother.
So thank you this episode to Patricia, Liv, Ben, Nastasia, Michael, Maggie, and Gloria. It's been great to hear all of your responses, and I've still got some coming in, so if you'd like to contribute, please go to briancam.com/record. And if you would like to support the show and my attempt to balance the realities of writing a book about philosophy with paying the rent, please consider signing up at patreon.com/briancam. That link is also in the show notes. You can also sign up to my Substack, where I post less frequent but also important updates. And I'm also hosting some events coming up, both in London and online. So if you're interested in hearing more about the book that I'm writing, which is called Neither Nor, please consider signing up at briancam.substack.com. And I look forward to hearing from you.